Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
What I wanted to ask you is, because I had an Irish guy on the other day, and now I've lost all confidence in saying last names. So for the guests, welcome Sophie. But how do you pronounce your last name?
Colgan.
Colgan. I would have fucked it up.
Oh, really?
I would have been like, Colgan.
Well, I get Colgan a lot here in the US. I call it C-O-L-G-A-N. But now I'm married and I haven't changed my name yet. But my husband's name is Glynn. And I'm like, Sophie Glynn has a nice, like, I have that. I love my name. And like, it's not that I'm like, oh, I really don't want to change my name, but I'm also like the hassle that's going to come with trying to change it, like because of like green cards and passports. And yeah, so I'm still going by Sophie Colgan. I don't think he really minds.
So, oh, no. And Sophie Glynn does sound like someone who like performs on Glee or something. It seems like a famous
maybe I should
singer, Broadway singer.
Yeah, like Glynn, yeah. But no, yeah, so I'm Sophie Colgan.
Colgan. And so you have Navigating New York podcast.
Yes.
So, how did you start that? Or?
So I started Navigating New York, like so many people did, during the pandemic. And it's been dormant for a while because I've been traveling. I was away and I was in South America for a few months. My husband and I kind of had this planned for like the last 2 years. So we finally went and did it. It was amazing. But Navigating New York came about during the pandemic. So I've worked like since I moved to New York in July this year, I'll be here 10 years. So that's like crazy to me. I'm like, how has that gone so quickly? But I guess I've been quite lucky in the sense that since I moved here, I've worked a lot in like the Irish American community. So my first kind of proper job was in an Irish museum up on Fifth Avenue across from the Met. And I was like the events and marketing coordinator. And it was the dream job for me because I worked, or my degree was in communications and public relations. And I love like all Irish arts. And it was just such a cool experience for me in New York because I got to meet so many Irish people as soon as I got here. And Irish American people who were like willing to like pull me up with them and like, you know, like give me contacts and help me like develop. So I also got to do some pretty cool events. Like I got to like host the president of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins, when he visited New York. And I got to like, you know, like see all these kind of different plays and see actors and just really appreciate like the Irish artists that have moved away from Ireland. So whenever the pandemic started, I wasn't working in the museum anymore. And I was kind of like missing that like element of connection and like storytelling that I kind of always had like a bit of a front row seat for. So I was like, I should do a podcast about all of the amazing Irish people that live in New York. So, and with that came, I was like, right, how can I frame it? And what has it meant for me to kind of come here and have this community? And I was like, it's helped me navigate New York. It's helped me get like my first apartment, my first job, like extra work if I needed it, visas, etc. So that's why I came up with Navigating New York, which sort of started out with like trying to help people in their career. So if you're just starting out here and you're trying to get into a certain industry, I tried to find someone Irish that maybe I knew or heard of and would interview them. And then it sort of kind of organically shifted into talking about why people have left home. And that doesn't just apply to Irish people, obviously. New York is like where everybody comes and there's everyone from everywhere. So, and the US even. So, yeah, now it's kind of turned into like navigating life. And then, yeah, so I'm recording season 3 at the minute and I'm kind of excited to like sort of let it be a little bit more conversational and let it flow a wee bit more and not just talk about like, when did you get here? What did you do? You know, like talk to people about their experience and why is it possible to have two homes, or is it possible to pivot in your career, or are we like programmed to be in New York and feel like we have to work a million hours, or, you know? So it's nice now. I find like the more I've done it, the more easy it's sort of become to have those conversations, because, you know, it can be hard, especially if you don't really know your guest. I'm like, yeah, very formal, and then I'm like, that's too like rigid when you do it like that.
I mean, it depends, either or, because sometimes it's like an interview style, sometimes it's just chats. Like a lot of the time when I'm doing the podcast, I'll have like a list of things, and then we never get to the stuff, but it's always good.
Yeah,
you know, it's like fine. It's yeah, like nice.
But that's what I loved about having you on Navigating New York, because it just sort of rolled into a chat. And then I was like, oh yeah, like I had some questions to ask you. And that particular episode really helped me to be like, it's nice when things kind of naturally flow, and that, and then you lead into conversations that you didn't really mean to have, which yeah, is really, I think, more meaningful. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that anyway. You know what I, as a side note, wanted to ask, and it's not about your podcast, but yeah, the whole time you were talking about it, is your husband American?
No, he's from Galway.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking, like, with the Navigating New York, do you meet yeah, American? No. Okay. So did you move here together, or you met here?
No, like my dad always says, he's like, you went all the way to America and you married an Irishman. So I met him here on my first summer, like my J1 that I did before I moved. So I did like a 3-month thing with my friends and before my final year of university. And he had already moved here. He'd actually been living in Chicago for two years. So yeah, I met him. And then whenever I moved here officially, that's when we stayed in touch, and then we kind of officially started dating. And then, yeah, that was 10 years ago.
So you've dated an Irishman the whole time
the whole time in
New York. Have you ever dated Americans?
No, I have never dated Americans, which is actually such a like bad thing to say. I have met many Americans, but I've never dated any.
That's so funny.
That is actually quite funny. I've never thought about it that way. But I often say that we're just roommates, because when I moved here, he was like, do you want to stay? Because you have nowhere else to stay. And I was like, perfect. And then 10 years later, we got married. We've just shared an apartment.
So you were living together before you were even official?
Yeah, so we were living together. Actually, it's funny because we started in Woodlawn, and he was in a house that...
For any of the American listeners, this is sorry, like the most Irish.
Woodlawn is context. Like... It's in the Bronx. It's the last stop on the 4 train. It's where a lot of Irish have been for generations. And it's just like living in... It's such a lovely thing for us to have here, because you go there and you feel like you're at home. It's all Irish shops. It's like Little Italy, but Little Ireland.
Yeah.
But so whenever I came here that for the like officially moving here, my friend and I called his house in Woodlawn Galway, because we just felt like there was like 15 Galway people who lived in the house. There was just people always changing. Like there was, I don't know, even half the people that lived there, but a lot of like people kind of like just... They had, it was like a house of like 6 bedrooms. So we were there, like we were kind of just like my good friend Hannah and I just like lived there in one room for like a year. And then she was moving back to Ireland. And then Brian and I had like officially started properly being like official. And then we moved into an apartment with a friend of his. And then eventually we got our own apartment. So yeah, that's how it started. It seems like we just like it was all planned out, but it actually just worked in a very nice way that we kind of got to know each other better then, because we were living in the same place. So that was nice. I always think it's like important, because like I think as Irish people in our kind of tradition, like and I suppose a lot of people who are Christian, they like date and then they get married and then they live together.
Yeah.
And I just think that must be so hard, like to not live with someone before you marry them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I even feel like when you live together, it seems like less pressure for a marriage, because yeah, I think other people in relationships are like, okay, we need to get engaged before we live together. And then when you actually live together, you're like, oh, this is just what a marriage is anyway.
Exactly. If you can get through that, you can yeah, get, like, marriage is kind of just like a nice next step. But like one of my sisters, so I have 4 sisters. So she's like married with 2 kids, really happy. And her and her husband, not by like plan, but they were like building their house in Ireland. So it all just lined up that they weren't living together until they got married. And she was like, oh my God. She was like, you do not know someone until you live together. I'm like, yeah, we knew each other inside out by the time we got married.
Yeah. I think when me and my boyfriend moved in together, it made our relationship better because it was just like, yeah, you do get to know them on a different level.
Yeah.
And and the opposite as well could be like where it's like, no, this person's a fucking nightmare, I'm out. But at least you haven't committed to
them. Exactly. But the thing is, so it's funny, I was saying that we were in South America. We met this really, really nice German guy in Peru. And we're actually meeting him tomorrow. He lives in Brooklyn. Yeah. And we were talking about, so he's looking for an apartment in Brooklyn. He's been living here for like a year and a half. And he's dating a girl who also lives in Brooklyn. And I was like, would you not just move in with her? And he was like, no, no, no. He was like, because if we break up, what do we do? Like, do we just live together until the lease is over? He's like, I was like, that's actually really smart, because then you have to, like, that makes a breakup more intense, because you also have to be like, right, I have to get all my stuff out of here and find somewhere else. Let's just stay together. Do you know?
Oh, well, absolutely. I wonder as well if for any Irish listeners here, it's a 12-month lease and you will have to pay the continuation of the lease if you don't find someone else to come in, and you might have to secretly sublet it. Like I had signed a lease when I first moved over here, and then I hated like the conditions I was living in. Yeah. So I just like, which is probably mean, but I like sublet it to someone else on Craigslist.
Yeah.
So it worked out. But I feel like people, if you have a hard thing in a relationship, you might just break up. But if you live together, you're like, oh, I still got 6 months. You might work through it better though.
Yeah.
In one way. You know, you might like
resilience.
You become more like willing to compromise, because you're like, oh well, you know, that was annoying that he did that, and usually I'd break up, but let's work through this.
Yeah, exactly. So I think though that's the difference about living in your home country, wherever that is, with family, that you kind of have that safety net. Like, you can go and stay at your sister's or your parents, but here it's a little more intense. So yeah, I'm glad that we kind of had all of those, like, it was the first 3 or 4 years until we actually moved in, only just us. So yeah, and now we live in Jersey, so we're like just north of Hoboken, and there's so much more space there than Manhattan.
I know a couple of Irish who have gone out there.
Yeah. It's funny, people are like, you live in Jersey and you like work in, well, I work for myself, but like I'm in the city all the time. They're like, that's crazy. I'm like, no, literally the ferry across like drops me at 39th Street and it takes 6 minutes and you're in the city. Like it's, and there's the bus, you're right at the Lincoln Tunnel. So we love it there. So we were in the Bronx first and then in Jersey. It's really, yeah, we really like it there. We've got like a nice spacious apartment, as opposed to what we were going to live on the Upper East Side. I always wanted to live on the Upper East Side, I think, because I worked there for a while. And like, we were just, the apartments were just so small. I was like, we're really big. Like, we're both 6 foot. I'm like, we need some more room. Well, he's 6'2", but I'm 6 foot. But I'm like, yeah, we're too big for these tiny apartments.
Oh, you said you work for yourself. What do you do?
So I say work for myself. I set up my own consultancy 2 years ago. So it's just me. It's me. Like,
that's amazing. I love that. That's why I love doing comedy. I don't like having a boss.
Yeah. So essentially, I am still doing similar work to what I was doing before I set it up. But now, you know, I do it sort of independently. So I'm a contractor as opposed to an employee for one organization. So I work with like some nonprofits, with some like cultural organizations, and I help with their public relations, their like fundraising and like events coordination. So it's nice now because I have a little bit of variety and instead of just working for one organization. But then again, it's like, I'm sure it's like with comedy or anything that you're sort of self-employed in, that you can have like, it's like a feast or a famine. Sometimes you're like loads of work, and then, but it's funny, like, because before we traveled, like we left for South America in December and then we just got back there like early May. And being away from work, like I was able to do a little bit of stuff online, but like it was just nice for me to be like a little bit more focused on, not focused, but just get a, remember why I want to work in the sort of with the different organizations that I work with. And sort of, I think before we left, I was just saying yes to every project.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of burning out on some things. And then I felt like my podcast was, even though it like really doesn't make any money for me, but it's something I want to pursue. I'm like, I wasn't prioritizing the thing I wanted. I just thought I have to say yes to everything that comes. And I think you and I kind of chatted about that as well, that you can sometimes lose the way, especially when you're doing it for yourself. You're like, oh shit, like no one else. I'm not just going to get a check every week if I don't actually do all this stuff. But then it's about finding that balance, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel the same too with comedy. Like, you know, a lot of comedians feel like they have to take every single gig, but then you get established enough that you don't necessarily have to, and you can pick or choose. But there's still that kind of guilt. And even last night I did a show, and the guy who runs it is so nice. It was going to be unpaid, but I was like, I like the guy who runs it. And before the show started, he was like, oh, all the audience are sitting in the back. And it's like a club, they should always sit up the front. But this club didn't have a bouncer. Usually they have a bouncer. And I was like, I'll just get on stage and tell them to move up if you like. And he was like, oh, that would be so great. Because, you know, because you, not to like gender roles, but we were both kind of thinking, usually when a woman gets up and it's like, hey, can you get it? It's just like a softer touch.
Yeah.
And that they might just ignore him off the bat because he's like a guy. And he is like a very, he's very Irish American. He's very like, oh my God, man. He's very curmudgeon-y. Yeah. So he was like, oh, that would be great. So I was just trying to be nice. And on stage, I was asking everybody to move up. And they were like, yeah, yeah, of course, no problem. And they were coming up. And there was a couple in the corner. And I was like, do you guys want to move up? And then they didn't answer me. And I was like, do you think you'll move up? And then they didn't answer me. And then I was like, can you hear me? And they didn't answer me. And I was like, I'm so confused. And then I just was like, did I just like slip into a different dimension?
Yeah.
And the rest of the audience kind of laughed at that. And then he shouted at me. And he was like, I don't have to fucking explain to you why I would be uncomfortable moving up. But I mean, he was like in the corner in the back. Like, there's no reason why I had a show. Now you're just like a peeping Tom in the back. But I just go, okay, I'm done. And then I got off, and the guy who runs it was like, thank you so much. I'm sorry about that guy. I don't know what's good. Just don't interact with him when it's during your set. And I was like, yeah, obviously I'm not going to fucking interact. You want me to cry on stage? But then I'm on stage, I'm doing my set, and I'm just performing to the people there. And it's all grand. And I definitely felt like there was, I don't know, there was something in him that was like a bias against me. I don't know what it was, but it felt charged.
Wow.
Do you know? It felt... Wow. But as I was performing, I was like, and I was having fun and stuff like that. And I did my job and I got off, but I kind of thought, I'm not fucking paid to be here. Do you know what I mean? I was tired today. I didn't want to come out or else next time I won't offer. Not to be like, you shouldn't offer to help, but it's not my show.
Yeah.
It wasn't worth that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to fucking please everybody.
That's it. Like, I think we can be people pleasers. And that's a big characteristic I notice in myself.
It's such an Irish thing, I think.
Do you think so?
I think so. Like, yeah. I'm always generalizing Irish people. But then every time I talk to an Irish person, there's a big like, a big people pleasing thing.
No, there is. No, I agree with you. But sometimes I'm like, I think I do the same thing. And I'm like, am I like we were talking, I was with friends last night and they are also Irish and they're amazing, but we were talking about like sometimes when people get to a certain level of success, like do they sometimes, you know, really successful people might have the opportunity to help somebody a little less successful who's like from the same place as them, and so someone at dinner sort of said, oh yeah, like, you know, Irish people can sometimes not do that, like they kind of pull the ladder up behind them.
Oh really?
And I was like, that is not my experience at all. I was like, I've been like, so I think every group is different, and like it's hard, it's like we do kind of typically generalize things like, oh, that's such an Irish thing. But I was like, I actually really disagree with that. I'm like, I think that's just every kind of diversity of people. There's always going to be the kind of more selfish person who's not going to help anyone, no matter if you're from the same like country or not. Like, I think we see that, especially in America. I'm like, that I also do think that like when you're living somewhere really competitive, it might sort of change you a little bit. And I think that it's important to like, it's to me, that's like that example that you just gave about the guy doing that, like it's so sometimes I think, especially maybe New Yorkers, would, that's like water off a duck's back. They're like, whatever, like, fuck that guy.
It really hurt me.
I know. And I think that's really like an important quality that like not to lose as well, because it's like, that's actually like, we don't want to just let things like that like just go. And like, because it's good to be resilient, but like that's hurtful. And again, you're in a, like, I MC events and stuff, like it's something that's kind of just happened throughout my sort of life in New York. And now I've been getting, I put like MC in my bio on LinkedIn, and I'm getting all these offers. I'm like, this is so good. Like, I really enjoy that sort of performative part of like public relations or fundraising or whatever it might be. And I can like sometimes I'm like, right before I go on, I'm like, holy shit, this is like adrenaline. Like, I'm excited to do this, but you're also very vulnerable. And like, that's something that I just think in your line of work cannot be like underplayed, because you have to, like, I just have such respect for a comedian, especially a female comedian, to get up and you're there being like your good, honest self. I'm going to help out. I'm going to do this. And then like some asshole does that. But at least you got up and you continued and you didn't like.
Yeah, I still did my set afterwards. I went out when I was, and I just performed to the people. And like, I think with that, if it had been a if I had been during my set, or if I had been a different show. Yeah. Usually when people heckle you, I'll always be able to handle it. But there was something that it's like I felt it. It felt charged. Like, it felt like, I don't know what issue he had, but it felt like, this isn't about me.
No.
Maybe this is about women. Maybe this is, he had a bad experience with, like, you know, a white woman at one point, or maybe it's an Irish woman. But it felt like he was like,
oh my God.
Because it was like, I feel like any person who didn't have he would have just been like, oh, we don't want to move up.
Yeah.
But it was just from the bat to ignore. It felt like so disrespectful, but it felt like there was something there that I'm like, I'm not getting into this.
No,
or maybe it's just a person who had a bad day and was looking to fight with someone. I don't know, but it was like, it felt like, it didn't feel like the normal, like, heckle or someone getting mad. It didn't feel like it would be fun if I interacted with it. So I was just like, all right.
Yeah. Maybe he should have went to, like, therapy or yoga instead of a comedy class or a comedy show. Like, that's just bizarre. But yeah, that's, I think that sometimes it's very, especially because you're on, like, you're on stage and you're, I like that. I think you can sometimes like take for granted that people are going to be as like, I do think that we reciprocate energy. And whenever like sometimes, like, for instance, I feel like if you're going into a job interview, if you're so nervous and stuff, you can be really, that can like reflect on the person and the whole thing can become a bit stagnant. Whereas if you have confidence and you're happy, often it'll like, I always think that as well with family, like, especially when you live away from home and you go home. And you know the way things can be just tense, like whatever's going on. If you come in with lots of energy and happiness and you're being helpful and normal and nice, that's often reflected, like, in whatever situation. But yeah, that's, that guy just,
that's how I feel. That's because I've offered to do that for a ton of shows. Like, I've been, and the host has been and it's like really stressful for the host to have to like ask people so like let's say if you're at New York Comedy Club, they will say, you have to sit up the front and then we sit backwards, and they shout that, they have a bouncer, because it would be insane to be performing someone in the dark in the corner. It doesn't make sense. It makes for a bad show. But then you'll go to these shows, and I have done it a couple of times where I've been like, I don't mind getting up, because I know I'm like positive, and usually that was like so out of left field. But look, you're gonna, but what I wanted to say though, with the Irish friend saying that Irish people close the door behind them. I haven't found that either. And I think what happens is sometimes, I think it's what you said, is in maybe someone gets caught up in this New York. And it's like maybe one Irish person did that to someone. And then it's like we kind of, whereas in my experience, for the most part, I found Irish people quite helpful. And like, so every time an Irish person reaches out to me, I'll always like give them all the contacts, and you know, sometimes you'll miss a message, but then you'll follow up and you'll, you know, and I'll take them around or whatever I can when it comes to comedians, just because, yeah, I feel like I should do that.
Yeah.
And it's important to give any opportunities where you can. And I found that like with other Irish comics, like when Shane Todd came here, he had me open, he reached out, he found who was the Irish comics, and he connected me with whatever, like that's the reason why I'm going to be doing the Dead Rabbit show, is because he connected me there. And you know, when Aaron came over, I like got him on my shows and helped him out, and like that's just the way it should be. I always think that yeah, you should. And the other side of it is though, sometimes I wonder, do you have to know your level? So let's say if someone's like, oh, an Irish person closed the door and didn't give them an opportunity, but it's like, but could that person do that opportunity? You know what I mean? Like if someone comes over here and they're from Ireland and they're like, I've never done stand-up comedy, can you help me get a spot on New York Comedy Club? No, that's mental.
Yeah, exactly.
I can point you in the direction of mics. I can, so each level, do you know, like, whereas when Aaron comes over, Aaron's well capable to New York Comedy Club. I'll happily recommend him. But then there's other comics who are younger and it's like, oh, here's this list of produced shows.
Yeah.
I'm not going to recommend them for the club where it would be bad for them to even, that's insane. I'm not gonna put someone up who's just gonna bomb their hole off. Yeah. Or, you know what I mean, it's like there's levels. So I do wonder sometimes, do people go, oh well, they didn't give me this opportunity, and it's like, well, they can't recommend you for that. Yeah. You're not able to do.
Yeah.
So I there's, yeah, like so many like gray areas with these things.
It's so true. And I think there's, as you say, there's like a balanced kind of approach to it, because I find that, like, especially if you're from a small town, like I'm known as the successful person, Sophie, who moved to New York. Oh my God. And like, I really haven't, like, I've achieved things, but like, I'm not in any way celebrity or famous or, but like, they then think that you, and you are, like, you've actually achieved things. You have like a name.
No, so have you, though. But you're your own job.
Thank you so much.
That's amazing.
But you know what I mean? I think that they think, oh, if you contact, like, sometimes it does get a bit like, oh, I'm not, like, that's not what I do, or I can try to help you in this manner. But it's also on the other scale of it, though. It's like, you have to, I think that, like, if you're looking for, say, for instance, like, there's I won't name the person, but there's a person who's made a big name for themselves in media in New York, and they're Irish. And I wanted to get their advice on, like, I was like, I wonder would they, I was trying to, like, make a decision with a career move. And I reached out to them, and I really wasn't expecting a response. And that person went over and above for me. They did like a Zoom call with me and like went through all of the pros and cons. And I was like, oh my God. But I kind of didn't approach that with, like, I was like, if you ever had time, I'd love, yeah, to just get your thoughts on this, but absolutely no pressure. And then they came back to be like, I think when you don't like force it upon a person, yeah, they're going to be more intrigued. Like, it's like this book I'm reading. It's called Tribe of Mentors. I don't know if you've read, reading it.
I'm not reading it.
You're reading it. So it's by a guy.
I mean, that's how I would say it too.
Yeah.
Are you reading it?
Yeah. My sister, my niece actually is like 5. She's called Sienna. She's so beautiful. She's learning how to read at the minute. And she's like learning things phonetically. And it's so hot. She's really good at spelling. And she's like, she was like learning the word one, like how to spell like the number one, like O-N-E. And she was like, she was writing a note for me, and she said one day, and she spelled it like W-O-N, and I'm like, that is actually phonetically, yes, how you would spell one. Like, she, I'm like, you're actually so smart. But anyway, so this book I'm reading is Tim Ferriss, Tribe of Mentors, and he basically interviews like 150 of the best, most successful CEOs of all different, not just CEOs, but people who are super successful in different industries. And he asked them all the same 12 questions about how they've gotten to where they are. And basically, he's like, in the book, it's very interesting, because everybody has different, like, depending if they're like a chef, or they're like an artist or a singer, or they're like a CEO of a big tech company. There's like themes throughout the answers. And it's like, if you are like trying to progress in your own career, your own journey, you cannot depend on someone else to like do that work for you. Mm-hmm. And you have to be as prepared as possible, and like make it as, like, he even actually in the like prelude to the book, he talks about how he like sent all these emails out, like he sent like 1,000 out to like these people, and only a certain number came back. But it's all about your approach. Like, if you kind of make it intriguing for them, and you show them that this isn't going to take a lot of their time, yeah, and it would be super interesting to get their point of view, they're more inclined to do it, or at least even reply and be like, oh, I'm really sorry, I don't have time, yeah, you know. So I think it's the way, like, in general, it's the way that you kind of observe it, or the way that you approach it. Like, if you're, you know, and I think that's important, especially when you're new to a city, is like not to like put all your eggs in one basket and be like, this person could help me. You have to kind of sort of be prepared for that they might not have time, and as you say, they might not actually have the ability to do that certain thing that you think that they can, because their reality might be a little different.
No, absolutely. And I do think for the majority of Irish messages I've gotten, they've been really like nice, ooh, and sweet, and like, and people even just messaging being like, have you have a chance, I'm just now, the question I get a lot is like visas, and I'm like, oh, each time I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not a lawyer. I have no idea. No, don't even know how I'm here.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah. Let's not get into it. But I think for the most part, people do, they do send, like, Irish people for sure. It's a very, like, oh, please, thank you.
Yeah, so polite. Yeah.
But yeah, for the odd person who's maybe shut down, maybe you were asking for too much. Or also, like, someone messaged me you know, a listener messaged me and they were going through a problem with another podcast, and I don't really understand it, so I won't get into it, but I don't think it sounds great. I think maybe this podcast like shit on this fan or whatever. Mm-hmm. And when the person messaged me, I just responded nicely when I eventually saw it. And then they were like, oh, I also messaged these other podcast hosts, and you know, maybe I shouldn't have messaged them. And I was like, I promise you that they just didn't see it.
Yeah,
that's the other thing you need to know, like I miss follows, I miss messages all the time, because it might be a day where you're getting a ton of messages. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing too, when you're reaching out to people, like they might just miss it or they might not know you're there.
Yeah.
The other thing too, with like New York is so competitive that sometimes like people want to be the comic. Like there was a comic in another state, but they were saying that their name was like Irish blah, and and of course there was no other Irish comics, but once they started hearing about other Irish comics, they just changed it to their name. But and maybe that's what other comics were calling them. Mm-hmm. But let's say, for an example, like in competitive cities like New York, some Irish comedian might be want to be the only Irish comedian. Mm-hmm. Which I hate. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. I want like a community. So that's why, mm-hmm. like when I knew Irish comics were coming over, like having the Irish show, or with the Dead Rabbit trying to get Irish comics on it, or having like, you know, there's this guy Aidan Kelly or Liam Dalton, he's like a first generation Irish, but like, you know, I try to get them to open, if you know, my boyfriend obviously as well, and then like my friends too who are immigrants, but if I do like an Irish show, I'll have them. But yeah, it's like you should want to build a community. Exactly. Not be like it should, and it's like I remember when Ashlyn B got like a 15 minute special on Netflix, which I still haven't watched, and I should, and I will. So many comics messaged me, and I wasn't like doing, I don't know, I feel like that was like 6 years ago or something. It was a long time ago, but I wasn't like living off comedy. And loads of comics messaged me being like, oh, how do you feel now, like they already have the Irish comic on Netflix. And I was like, that doesn't mean they won't have other, it's more, it's good, it means she's opening the door to like Irish women.
Yes.
100%. And so yeah, I hate the jealousy or the competition, like, oh, well, don't only book one Irish person on a show. And it's like, that's not true.
Yeah.
That's not, and it's not like, it's not like me and Aaron are going to be on a show and we're not saying the same things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that it's like.
But I think it's so interesting you say that, because I think sometimes, like, when you think about how people have, like, become successful in whatever their passion is or their career is, like, if we stop ourselves by saying, and sometimes I get that voice in my head myself without anyone saying it to me, like, I can't do that because someone's already done it. Or like, there's no point in me creating a podcast because there's loads of other good podcasts. Like, and even for, it's funny you've said that, because about like community and like supporting people. So I think that like what I want to do with my next steps, and I've talked the next steps of my podcast, and I've talked to a few people over the last couple of weeks, is create a community for Navigating New York, where like all these like messages that you get and that loads of other people get about, like, you know, people trying to figure out their visas and, you know, meet friends, and they're like, have a network for them. Mm-hmm. Just as like a support group. That's not like it, you don't have to be X, Y, or Z. You don't have to be employed. You don't have to have a corporate job. You don't have to, like, there should be no real, the only thing you kind of should like have to be is having moved to New York, like, and you want to make new friends. And because there are loads of really great networking groups, but sometimes they're quite specific to, like, if you work in digital, or if you, you know, are like a young leader in some sort of a, in like some sort of a corporate setup. So I think that, but I was talking to like a couple of people about it, and they were like, you should totally do that, like create a Navigate New York community. And I'm like, yeah, but there's other ones. And I'm like, it doesn't matter if there's other ones. Like, matter. So we have enough of that in our own head, I think, to like where other people are going to like, like, I just think we can get caught up and stuck in our own heads whenever, like, even when you think about, like, the best inventions in the world, like, they can't be, like, I'm sure people weren't, like, or even in tech now and all these amazing startups, like, yes, you're always going to, there's always going to be something similar or something of the same sort out there, but you can't let it stop you sort of do what you're doing. But it's funny because I've seen people do that, like, they say they're the Irish, like, the Irish fitness trainer of New York, or the Irish, whatever. It's like, there's loads, like, there's millions of us here.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it's whatever it is, what it is, but it's also like, you also don't want it to be just defined by being Irish. It's like, so it's a nice cute quirk that we have here. I'm gonna say that it's like a quirk to them, to the Americans, because they're like, you sound adorable, or or we're just, you know, there is stuff in our culture that I think is quite nice that we just have automatically, if it's like politeness or the fact that you brought cookie or cupcakes. That's so sweet. That's so Irish. It's so, so sweet. It's so nice. And but yeah, you don't also just want to be the Irish person. You're yourself. Yeah. And you have a lot more to offer. And even when I started comedy, it was like, I didn't want to just rely on talking about Irish stuff. Now I do talk about Irish stuff because I also was like, I don't want to not be able to talk about it, you know, because sometimes in comedy, it's exhausting. They're like, you can't talk about being a woman. You can't talk about your period. You can't talk about, if you're Irish, you shouldn't talk about it because that's hack. You can't talk about being a fish out of water. You can't talk about dating apps. You can't, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you can talk about anything. Just make it.
Who creates them rules?
Just fucking older, bitter comics.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't really want to follow you. Yeah. You're like still, we're on the same show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a great idea. And I think that's another thing about, like, if you are Irish and listening to this, like, not just to go into an Irish community.
Yeah.
Like, there's, I'm glad that I made friends who are, like, South American.
Yeah.
Or, you know, my Middle Eastern friends have, like, let me celebrate Eid with them and stuff like that. And that's stuff that I would have never got to do if I didn't just, if I was, like, just, like, I need to come over and be in, and Woodlawn, again, is great, and that's your choice, but it's nice to sometimes like venture out and meet people from different.
Oh, 100%. I think that's so important about when you leave home is to actually be on that adventure, no matter where you're from. And I think that we're blessed as like a group in this country to have this sort of respect that we have and the sort of love that we have, because but it wasn't always that way. You know, it was not that way, especially in New York, like even like 100 years ago, it wasn't that way. So but I think I see that with people sort of getting stuck in there. It could be in any real way. Like I think sometimes I do remind myself, I'm like, we're living in New York, like let's do something complete. And it was actually being in South America that made so many places that we saw, I was like, that sort of reminds me a little bit of New York, like Buenos Aires in Argentina. And I'm like, when you actually go out and see all of like where a lot of the cultures in America come from, and you see them, their actual countries, like Ecuador, like, you know, or like the Dominican Republic and the Caribbean. Then when you come to New York, you have such an appreciation for why people have tried so hard to get here. And their stories are so interesting. And like, for instance, like I really admire like Maeve Higgins, because as an Irish comic and writer, like she's really engrossed and like herself in this like culture of New York. And she writes about all sorts of issues that aren't just specific to being Irish. And yeah, I think that's like, there's no point really moving anywhere, London or anywhere, Canada, if you're not sort of going to experience the diversity of where you are. So it's great to have the roots that we have and be so loved by America in general. But yeah, there's more to be in New York than just, you know, and I think we can sometimes like limit ourselves with like what we think our identity is, you know, because we've kind of been brought up in a small country. And that's why like I'm not just saying this to be like cliche or like fangirlish, but it's so cool to see you doing such a good job of comedy and like putting yourself out on a stage, literally. That's like, I've never seen anyone in our sort of like age group do it, and I'm like, this is so cool. Like, and that's like, you couldn't do that if you just stayed in your own lane, or if you just said I'm not good enough, or they won't get me, or you know, have that kind of insecurity. So yeah, and I think more and more people are doing that. They're like, especially like now with like TikTok and everything, they're able to be more expressive and not feel like they're gonna get like judged, because there's a niche for everything.
And I think people are more now taking risks, and with the whole thing of like getting in trouble and getting cancelled, you know, like, and when I say cancelled, I mean like not like you attacked people and you're a bastard, not that, but I mean, yeah, you should be cancelled. But I mean, like, people are just getting cancelled on TikTok for someone misinterpreting what they said. But it's happening so casually now that I think people are getting more comfortable with, okay, people are gonna misinterpret what I say, so it's okay. So I think it's like getting to a
it's like, but that's, it's like Inception or something, because you're like, hi, wait, okay, so is this person now apologizing for what they thought someone, like, that's kind of like, it took me a while to understand what catfishing is, and sometimes I'm like, not catfishing, sorry, gaslighting. It's like when I actually can't really, maybe I don't understand what gaslighting is, but sometimes I go on TikTok and I'm like, wait, so this person is apologizing about how they were interpreted. And then I'm like, wait, you have to go back and be like, I expressed myself in a way that I shouldn't have. It's bizarre. I don't know how, like, I actually deleted TikTok because I never really got into TikTok. And then when we were traveling, I was like, oh, like, people were like, you should create TikToks because all your, like, pictures and videos are amazing. And I created, like, 3 videos and got, like, some good views. And then I was, like, spending time on my phone. And I was, like, trying to be, when we were away, not be on my phone. I was like, yeah, I'm just deleting the app. So, because, yeah, you just go in. Do you do a lot of TikTok?
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
You kind of have to, though.
It's a nightmare. Yeah. It's just, and it's, like... you know, I don't really do anything political, and then I'll do like the odd crowd work or something, and I'm like, how you also don't know words, because the comments that they're commenting, they're like, this is, and whatever word they're saying, I'm like, that is actually not the definition. You can't just say someone is that. You have you even watched this clip?
Yeah. Maybe they haven't.
Doesn't fucking make any sense. Did not say this about you, sir.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just mental. So you went away for how many months?
We went just under 4 months. So we went on, when did we go? 20th of December. And we traveled. So Brian's really good with geography. I'm so bad with geography. And he's like, he has just always, I actually think his knowledge of, like, in a trivia quiz, he like knows out all the answers about different countries and cities. And whereas I don't know why I didn't pay attention in geography. I just literally don't know. Well, I know general like continents and countries, but he really had put time into like our itinerary. And so, yeah, we went again. We started.
And it was just the two of you.
Just the two of us.
This is so great.
So we backpacked. We had enormous. Mine was a 35 liter backpack. I think his was like a 50 liter backpack. And we stayed in hostels, and South America is so cheap. Like, we started in Colombia. So I'll just tell you all the places we went quickly. So we started in Colombia, then we went to Ecuador, Bolivia, then we went to Chile, and then Argentina, and then we went to Brazil, and then we finished in Peru.
It's amazing.
So it was the best. Like, it was out of this world. It really, like, the people in all of the, like, all the places we went, just we don't speak Spanish, but we learned I'm gonna say a fair bit. Like, we were able to converse a little bit on the, when we, like, after 2 months we had like Spanish for Dummies, and we had like Duolingo and all those apps downloaded, but like, until you're actually in a country, and they all have different accents as well. Like, everybody obviously speaks Spanish, but except for in Brazil, they speak Portuguese, which we were like, oh shit. We just had gotten like a grasp of it. But, and now it's like we're trying every week to like learn a little bit more Spanish and actually do lessons, because it's also a really handy language to have here. Yeah. Like, but so yeah, we sort of averaged at about 2 weeks in each country, 2.5 in some. And like, when we went to Colombia, so we rented out our apartment in Jersey to a lovely couple. So our rent was paid. And when we were in Colombia, we started in Cartagena, and then we went to Medellin, which is like, Medellin was incredible. That's where like Pablo Escobar lived. And like, that was like the most dangerous city in South America for like 20 years ago. It was like, the you wouldn't go to Medellin ever. Like, there'd be no tourism there. There was all the communes, a lot of war in the city itself. And now it's like the most vibrant, like, recovered, like, or city. Like, it's so colorful, and the people, like, there's no, very little violence there now. And it was like, we absolutely loved Colombia. And when we were there, we were like, we're actually saving money by being here, because like, a coffee, which was amazing, it was like 50 cents, and like, you go out for dinner, like, we were in Santa Marta, which was, it's kind of like a rural sort of beach town, and we would like have dinner on the beach by our hostel, and like, have the beers and like people just selling stuff on the beach, and it would be like $10. We were like, this is insane. Like, we couldn't. Then we would even go to cheaper countries like Bolivia, which is just a very kind of, it's like an underprivileged country. Like, their economy isn't great, but they're like the happiest people ever. And again, like, you couldn't, like, we had budgeted for countries, and like, we didn't even hit the budget, because also hostels and stuff are so affordable. Like, we were saying, now our only rule was, we weren't going to do dorm rooms because we had so much shit. Like, we had literally so much, like, our bags were huge. And also, we were like, do you know what? We're 30. We're not going to do that.
Yeah.
It's like, that's okay. So, like, for $5 extra, you get a private room with, like, a bathroom. And, yeah, like, I was like, some of these hostels are nicer than, like, the apartments in New York. Like, they have, like, warm water and they're clean.
Yeah, New York has prepared you for your traveling.
Exactly. But no, have you ever been anywhere in South America?
No, I really want to go. Oh, but God, is it hard now to readjust coming back to New York? Like, oh God.
It was a bit of a culture shock. So, but no, we're back for 2 weeks now. And I have to say, like, it was the most amazing experience, but there's also something nice about being in one place again, because it sounds like an ungrateful thing to say, but like, traveling does become a little bit exhausting. And like, we met people like who were traveling for a year, like backpacking, and they were kind of like in their last few months and they're like, yeah, we're kind of like excited. It depends what age you're at. Like, we met quite a few like people in their like young 20s who've just like finished college, and they are just like loving life because, you know, you don't really have a standard for living then. You're like, as long as I have somewhere to lie down in the evening, I'm good. So, but it definitely was a bit of a culture shock. I think what we were most shocked by was like, even in the last 4 months, how more expensive like day-to-day things have gotten, like our groceries and coffee and...
Jesus, coffee's like fucking $7. And then for anybody who doesn't live in New York, they put up a thing and they're staring at you and it says the tip. And it says like 18%, 20%. So 18%, 20%, 22%. But actually, traditionally for a beer, it's $1. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden now for a coffee, I'm having to tip more than a fucking dollar for whatever way it works out, percentage wise. I don't know if I'm doing the maths right, but my coffee, like if I get a nice coffee, it turns out to be like over $8.
It's ridiculous. And I read an article about tipping. What was the word they use? It's like how New Yorkers especially are getting really anxious about having to buy things, like, because like essentially if you're not paying for service, so if you're not sitting down somewhere and having someone bring it to you, you don't, in my opinion, you don't really have to tip, like, because you're just it's like a to-go.
Yeah.
Or you don't have to tip 20%, like, and now, and even if you buy, like, an ice cream from somewhere, they'll have that iPad and they'll turn it around. You're like, what? Like, why am I tipping 20% on this? So, and we obviously have the power to say no, but then you're like...
But they're staring at you. Yeah, I can't. I feel so guilty, but I'm like, also like... This is crazy.
Yeah. Oh, tipping fatigue. That was it was like how like now New Yorkers are spending less than they usually would on these things like coffee, because it's actually it's having that knock on effect where you're not just going out to grab a $5 coffee. Now it's all costing $10. Yeah. So I think like sales are going to have gone down a little bit of like general sort of like to go things. Whereas like, yeah, and I guess we never carry cash anymore as well. So you're kind of like, I was just talking about this to someone, like, I still don't know what like cookies are, do you know, like on a website. And like, we were talking about that thing where every time you talk about something that comes up on your phone and you're like, oh shit, like I was just talking about Costco and there it is on my phone, or I was talking about skiing and then there's an ad for skiing. And I was like, but I think when we go on a new website and it says accept all cookies, that we shouldn't hit yes, but I just hit yes. I don't know why I hit yes, and I don't know
I just am confused. Just like, I want it to be like, done. Yeah, I just want to fucking read the article.
It's like, what happens if you press no? Like, is this why they know all our location services?
It's so true.
Do you want your location services on this app? I'm like, yeah, why not? Like, now I can be tracked.
Yeah, well, thank God, because I got some crazy exes. I'm just waiting for one to come out of the woodwork. No, you know what the tipping too, I'm gonna make a stance. I don't understand the tipping on the coffee. And I know my friend one time was a barista and she was like, oh, it's so rude when people don't tip on coffee. And then Karen Feehan was on the podcast and she was like, oh, we should always tip on coffee, blah, blah, blah. And I get it, but it's also like, you're doing well, you have a bit of money. I don't come from the tipping culture like that. Whereas I actually think I understand when you tip a bartender, you are sitting down, you're chatting. I fucking bartended. They chat. I become a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tip $1 on a beer. And if they like you, they tip $2. And sometimes they throw in extra. But I am chatting them. I'm giving that service. I get to know the name. I know the drink order. I'm walking in, I'm grabbing a coffee. This fucking coffee place that I go to, it's very handy. But I'm telling you, every time he gets my order wrong, and every time I've tipped, and every time he's rude to me. Yeah. So I am being lazy because it's close. And then we actually found, me and my friend found another coffee place, and the guy is so nice, and he was so sweet while he was making it. And I was going to be leaving, but I kind of thought, you know what? I actually don't mind tipping. But if you're going to be rude, and you're also getting the order wrong every fucking time, and then you kind of throw it at me, and then I'm not hanging around, you're not chatting, I just don't know what I am tipping for. And I know, because I bartended, the rate of pay has gone up, so it's not like the olden days. And it may still you might feel it's not survivable, but also if you're coffee shop, you're during the day, whereas bartenders are giving up their night a lot of the time. Even when I daytime bartended, I was like, I don't really know why people are giving me so much money. Because, you know, I have, but they were also, I was chatting to them. And a lot of the time, and sometimes people who would go sit outside, they wouldn't leave a tip. And I remember my coworker was complaining. He'd worked a shift and he was like, oh, you know, sometimes they go out. And I'm kind of like, but you know what? Like, I kind of get it. Yeah. We're already making loads of money. Yeah. I think that they're just like having a quick one and they're running out. You know, you're not dropping it down to them. You're not chatting to them. They're not sitting at the bar.
Yeah, I think the tipping culture has definitely changed. Like, I've noticed that as well, in terms of, like, when I moved here, I was waitressing. I was a hostess first, which was the most soul-destroying job in the world. Oh my God. It's like, to all the hostesses out there, just stick, hang in there, because you will get the waitressing jobs in, because it is, it's just so boring. You're standing. I remember in the summer, you'd be standing like nearly on the sidewalk with like the kind of podium in front of you, and you'd just be like, please somebody talk to me. It's like so grim. It's character building, but it's grim. But then whenever you get like the chance to waitress, I always, like, what I did really enjoy about it is, like, you kind of do have to give a little bit. You have to not perform, but you have to kind of, if you want to be tipped well, I think you do want to make their experience nice. Mm-hmm. And so totally, sometimes people like would only tip a small amount, and I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I actually, or I got that thing wrong, and so that kind of makes sense. But now it's kind of like this kind of across the board tip, and it's just like, it's a little bit insane.
It is. And even like, it also is at some bars where the guys, you know, you go in, they're like, what do you want?
Yeah.
And you're like, not to give you any money anymore. Yeah. Fuck, why are my friends here?
Yeah.
I really think the tipping extra is to do with the, hey, how are you? Like, like when I went back to Ireland, I found that someone was saying to me that the service was shite, and I did not find that at all. I found everybody was so friendly and nice, and I was like, I was tipping the way you would in America, because I was just used to it, but I also was like happy to. And then they were like, oh my God, thank you so much. Because I guess it's more like 10% there.
Yeah.
But you know, it's funny about the hosting. I tried to, bartended in Ireland. I did waitress in Ireland, and here I bartended and waitressed. But when I went to Chicago on a J1, I could not get a bartending or a waitress job to save my life. And it was, they wanted you to start off as a host. Now, in New York, it was different. Thankfully, I got in with an Irish guy, and I was bartending pretty quickly. Like, I was waitressing at a Bear Burger, and then I was bartending an Irish bar after. But when I was hosting, that is the hardest job. Sorry, I've never, for me, like, it depends on what your capabilities are. I can carry 7 plates. I can remember your drink, your crazy long drink orders. But the phone was ringing nonstop. Oh. And I didn't know where the hold is or whatever. I hung up on the owner, and he was an Irish guy, and he was pissed. And I just didn't come in the next day. No. I think I did like a weekend there, and I was like, this is way too stressful.
Yeah, it's stressful. And it's also like, if you're not busy, it's boring as hell, because you don't have anyone to talk to. You have to stay at the front of the fucking restaurant, and you're like, yeah. And then you get someone and you're like, oh my God. And then you sit them down and then you're like, bye. I do appreciate, like, I loved the days of waitressing here, though. Like, even in my first job, I continued to waitress like 2 or 3 nights a week, maybe 2 nights a week on a weekend day. But that's when I like really started to make friends that like I probably wouldn't have come across like anywhere else. Like, you know, like people who are from New York and the cool bartenders, and like, and then you go out. Like, it was like, when I think about my first few years in New York, like, they were like gregarious. Like, we were just out partying all the time. And like, I would finish on a Saturday, because I would do a Saturday double. I worked in a like bar restaurant in Turtle Bay, and like,
oh, that's crazy. Turtle Bay was crazy.
Bar across the road that everybody used to go to, maybe it was called Turtle Bay, But it was like when we finished at like I finished my shift at 11, so it'd be like 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. and then the first thing I'd do would be like sit up at the bar and like count my money or whatever I would do, and then the bartender would make me like a cocktail of like his own, like he was Irish actually, he was really funny, and he would like be like, try this, and he'd like make something really extravagant, and I'd be like, oh my god, that's so great. Then I'd have like three waiting for my friend Kelly, who was an American waitress. She didn't finish to 12, so I'd just be waiting for her and drinking up, and then I'd be like, then we would literally go out until like 4 or 5 a.m. and then I'd have to like recover on the Sunday and then go to work on the Monday, like go to my office job on the Monday, because I was like interning in an office for the first 9 months, and I was like, but I could do it back then. Now no way, I would just like be exhausted.
No, the hangovers are days after your 30s. Days.
And I'm sure that was that hard for you when you got here, like when you were doing comedy, did you feel like you needed like to drink a little bit to like get confidence, or what's that relationship like for you in terms of performance and...
No, I always drank a lot until comedy. Okay. And then I was like, I never wanted to drink before when I started doing it, because I didn't want to like rely on it. And I wanted, also I was just like, I really wanted to do this. I wanted to figure out how to make it work. And, you know, I had been an artist before. So like, you know, you have a project, you build, you know, I would never drink doing that, figuring it out how to make the art piece make sense or whatever. Yeah. So for me, it was like, no, I never drank went on stage. And then I would drink a lot afterwards. And then a couple of things happened that I was like, you know what, this is... Because the comedy world, it can be great, but it can also border on incel. So you as a woman, if you're in these spaces, and not to ever blame, but because it's just not our fault, but you are, you know, you're drinking after late, the mics could go as late as 12 a.m., 1 a.m., and then you're drinking with all these, and it's majority men. And it just can get a little, lines and blurred and get a little unsafe. So I think for me, I was like, I don't want that. I want to excel at this. So I want to do as many mics, as many shows when I started out, but then not drink afterwards. So it actually stopped me. I used to be a big binge drinker, but it stopped me drinking as much.
That's amazing.
Yeah, which I think is the opposite story for a lot of people.
Yeah, no, it is. Like, you showed, that was super, like, that's great that you kind of identified that early on, that if you want to be taken seriously and like not get yourself into, not that you weren't being taken seriously, but I think the hangover part would really, really would affect, really does affect like creative people a bit more, because you're like so... I was talking to a friend about this who's a writer, and I was like, you really have to be creative with your brain. And like, the one thing that doesn't work for me when I'm hungover is my brain. Like, I just can about function through the day. So like, that's in 2019, I totally stopped drinking. I haven't drank since. So that's like almost 4 years.
That's amazing.
Thank you so much.
It is a game changer, I think, when you drink less.
Such a game changer. Like, people often said, like, I sort of had a worrying relationship with alcohol. So, and it really was like accelerated in New York. Like, obviously in university I drank, and like we had great freshers weeks, and like I think everyone in their college years has that kind of party thing. And it's kind of excused, because it's like, you're in college, that's fine. As long as you kind of got something out of it, you're fine. But then, as I say, when I moved to New York and like... Oh, sorry, I think I hit the mic.
You're okay.
When I moved to New York and I was like working in bars or waitressing, everything was like... It was, I wouldn't say like bad then, but then in like a few years' time when I was working like a lot, and then I would... like be working in events. So when I worked like in the museum, I was always at events. I was either hosting them or going to fundraising events, or like going to something else that like had to be, we were supporting. And I just found myself, and at everything's an open bar, like at these kind of, like at luncheons there would be open bars, and I'm like, what the fuck, this is great, I'm gonna have a wine. And then I just find myself kind of like, my health, I like my both mental and physical health, I felt were like deteriorating. And I, like, I suppose I just was like, 1 month I was like, I'm just going to try to stop drinking and see what happens. And like that month, it was like September, I remember. And then October came and I was like, you know what, I'm going to keep going. And then like within a year, and like I dropped like 2 stone in weight. Like I'm obviously very tall, but like I was like, I wasn't exercising because I was always exhausted from work. And then I would have a couple of drinks and then I'd be like, I'll go to the gym in the morning. And then I wouldn't. And I'm like typically quite an athletic, like sporty person. I just love like running and all. And so then it actually totally changed my experience in New York, because I started to enjoy like the day, like the weekends, and like go to more things, and like and I think people, alcohol affects people differently, but I think what my hangover, like my husband Brian, like when he gets hungover, he's just, he's like, doesn't feel well, like physically. Mm. I always felt fine physically, but I would like, my mind would be so like dark. I'd be like so low, and I could have no productivity, or I'd be like, what did I say? Or like, does that person like me? Or did the I fear. Do this? And even the fear, the fear is just the most accurate way to describe that feeling. I'm like, I'm happy to never have the fear ever again.
Oh my God. I was like that, the same. It really affected my mental health. And more recently, I've been back, like letting myself have a few extra drinks and waking up like, like with a fright. And I'm like waking up guilty, but I didn't do anything. Yeah. I didn't, there's nothing like to feel, I didn't cheat on my boyfriend. I didn't rob someone. I didn't murder someone. Yeah. I feel guilty because did I chew the ear off that person? Yeah. Like, and they don't care. They were drunk too. But it's hard to navigate that.
It is hard. And it's really funny now, like as a kind of sober person, like I love to socialize and love to be like, I actually made this statement with Brian after we traveled, and he's like, you're really like, you're good at like staying out whenever you're not drunk. Like, and I'm like, I'm good at staying out as long as the people around me are good crack. Right? Yeah. If they're good fun, I'm happy to chat till all hours and dance. But if you're with someone who's a bore or is like a sponge, you're just like, oh my God, like I could be in bed, and I love bed. So I love early nights. But
I know.
It's good, like,
I know exactly. Even now, like I'll limit myself to one or two a lot of the times, and I can still stay out and have fun. And when I was in Canada, my friend brought me out salsa dancing, and I only had two drinks. I think it was only two. But we were out dancing, having so much fun. But then exactly the same, there'd be other times where I'd be like, okay, I'll go to this party, but I can't drink tonight because whatever, I'm just trying to save money or something. And I'm like literally like having FOMO for like SVU at home on the couch.
Yeah. And that's fine too. Like I think it depends where your energy is and like how you've had, like, I always feel like if I plan something after like a busy day or busy week, I'm like, I'm gonna be so tired. Like, I know I'm like, we did quite a few things yesterday. We met like friends we hadn't seen in ages, and literally last night, like 10 o'clock, I was like, I am exhausted. Because we have to, like, I think especially when you're kind of like an extrovert or you're, yeah, it can be tiring. But if you're, I think that when you get energy from people around you, you can last and you can have a good night. But I also think it's funny though what you were saying there about people, you know, when we have the fear, like, so now I'm with some of my friends and we'd be out and they'd be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry about last night. And I'd be like, no, you literally didn't do anything wrong. Like, that is alcohol telling you that you did something. You were fine. You were hilarious. Like, I would never judge anyone for, unless he did something like actually bad and you try to like get them away from that situation. But like, yeah, it is like, for me, and not to be like luxury on it, but it is like the only, it's a legalized drug. And I think it's just to be careful. Like, that is one thing I would say, no matter where you're from in the world, that when you move somewhere like to a city like New York, it can eat you up. Like and you can get really lost in that side of things. I think you can get lost in like alcohol, you can get lost in drugs, you can get lost in the wrong groups. Like, I actually have a podcast, there's an Irish guy I really admire. He's an author, he's called Colin Broderick. I'm not sure if you've heard of him. He's also, he's made a few films. And he will say it himself, because he's said it on numerous podcasts and stuff. He was at one point begging for money in Times Square. Mm-hmm. Like, he was homeless, and like, he's from Ireland, and he's like, had a job when he moved here. Mm-hmm. He worked in construction, and like, he, you know, was young and full of hope and dreams. And he literally, he has a book about it called Orangutan. I can never say that right. It's like the monkey orangutan.
Yeah, I know. I can't say it either. Yeah, I don't know how to say that.
I think it doesn't have a G at the end. But anyway.
And orangutan. I always say it with a tang.
A tang. Dang, dang.
That must be an Irish thing. Maybe there's apparently a bunch of words we can't say.
Yeah, I bet there's plenty of words we can't say. And we mispronounce it. But his book is all about, it's a really good book if you are interested in like addiction and stuff. Like, he talks about how his whole journey just totally kind of got like, it went from normal to like not normal really quickly. And then he found himself having lost everything, his apartment, and like he now has written like three books. He's got a family, they live in Jersey, and he's super happy, he's sober. And like, I remember reading that book, and we were actually, It's really mad. I was away. Had to get my visa renewed, and I went to the Bahamas. My immigration attorney was like, "You should go to the Bahamas because it's a much easier, it's a quicker process with the with the U.S. embassy." So I was like, "Sure, I'll go to the Bahamas." And I was there on my own. It was bizarre. Didn't need to know that, but I went.
No, how long were you there for?
Like literally 4 days. Okay. I couldn't take much time off work, so I had to go do my appointment. Get it if. If some people don't know, you have to like give your passport and it has to be like the visa has to be put into your passport. Anyway, so it worked out and I like stayed in like a hostel and it was great. But I read the book on that trip and I was like having a drink when I was there. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to like take a break. And the book really changed my way of like thinking about like how you can kind of, I think in New York especially, you can kind of let yourself get carried away with things because there are no rules because you're really here on your own. You know, you've got your friends, but there's no actual rules for like, people aren't going to be like, you shouldn't do that. Like you really can do whatever you want. So you kind of have to be careful about what your choice is, especially if you've been brought up, maybe not with getting like all these things. I think like when you come to America in general, you're like, wow, there's so much here. Like I could do this all. So yeah, that's definitely something I've like been a good choice for me in the last few years. I think I'm much happier as a person.
No, I think that's great to hear. And it's, you know, the stereotype is that Irish people like our booze, all that stuff. And I think we do. And I even found that a bit hard when I would try to hang out with some Irish groups here. It was just like drinking. Yeah. And then I'd be like, and I hate to perpetuate the stereotype, but it was something I noticed more with my Irish and Irish American friends. My Irish Americans are also guilty for this too, whereas I'd be like, you know, I just want to have one. And then they buy me a drink. I remember even times being like, I'm actually on antibiotics, and then my friend buying me a drink. And I'm like, this is really, it's quite hard to say no to. Yeah. And whereas I find a little different with my American friends. They're like, oh yeah, they're like, you know, they don't, they're just like, they can kind of not get as trashed. But it might be a comedian thing too. Comedians tend to drink a lot at parties and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just, if it's affecting your mental health,
yeah,
an addiction and just lose everything. That's amazing that guy got out of that.
I know, and like for him to be so like upfront and like open and honest about it, I think it's like a vulnerability that sometimes is like obviously very hard to kind of express if you've gone that low. But I think that like I actually started when I started my podcast, there was a few episodes that kind of came up about like alcohol, and then I got like people messaging me about like, oh, that's so cool, like I never thought, you know. I think it's in general there's a movement now. I think you see it a lot in Ireland as well, and in the UK, like there's, and even when we were traveling South America, like you can get like non-alcoholic beer, you can get non-alcoholic cocktails, you can get everything. I think people are definitely more aware of like that there's, you know, you don't need to drink, and it's no judgment if somebody doesn't drink. Like, and I think that's the most important conversation around it, is like, if so, like I often used to find at the beginning, people like, why are you not drinking? And I'd be like, oh, just, and they'd be like, are you an alcoholic? And I'd be like, don't, like, what? Like, let's just slow down. Don't, like, people often will try to like if they have an insecurity about their own relationship with what it's like in anything in life, people can sometimes like project their insecurity onto you.
Yeah.
And I'm always just like, it's nice to not be as judgmental and just like let people have their choice no matter what that is, like in general. And not, I think that's something that like we're quick to do as like just as people in general, is to react and like not like understand.
I think that's a really good point, because when I was on tablets for a while and I wasn't drinking, people were like, why aren't you drinking? Like, oh, you know, and it's like, this isn't about you. You know, like the only reason why for you to feel pissed off that I'm not having a drink or trying to buy me a drink when I'm on the, like, you know, I'm not judging you for I think sometimes when people drink heavily and you're not drinking, they think you're judging. And it's like, you're the one actually judging. Yeah. This isn't about you. It's my own personal journey. Yeah. I'm jealous that you can do this 4 or 5 times a week, have a full-time job. And good for you. I fucking can.
Yeah.
And a couple of my friends who have quit booze, there's one friend specifically who quit booze. And like that, like, it wasn't like he was about to lose the house before he quit. It was just more that he was feeling it like with comedy and feeling like really depressed the next morning after drinking, and just probably maybe questioning himself what he said to other comedians. I don't even think it was anything like he hadn't killed anybody, but seeing his comedy in the past 2 years since he's quit booze, I feel like he's grown so much. And I think it's right. I think whatever, if you're trying to be creative, multiple hangovers a week are not going to help.
No, I agree. I think especially that creative brain is like more fragile, not more fragile, but like you will be harder on yourself. Like I even know when I try to like, if I'm working on a project or something and I've like, I'm like, is this a thing when you turn 30 or you're in your 30s that like, even if I don't get enough sleep, I'm like, oh my God.
Me too. I feel like depressed if I don't get enough sleep. I'll go back to sleep and sleep till 2 p.m. just to get those extra.
Yeah. Like my sister was voicing up me the other day. We were talking. She'd like had a really busy morning. She's self-employed now. She like is a photographer and she's just amazingly creative. She used to work in corporate. So it's like a huge change. And like, she had done like a sunrise photo shoot and she'd like done like this mountain walk and she was like, I'm going to go for a nap and I'm not one bit sorry about it. I was like, I do that too. Like, if you have that freedom in the afternoon, take the nap.
Yeah, look after it. I know sometimes people give me the side eye when I'm like, oh yeah, like I don't wake up till like 1 or something. Yeah,
and
they're
like, fucking up until what time of night?
I know. I'm like, now I have to explain myself. I'm like, okay, well, you know, you're going to bed at 9. Yeah. I'm starting at 9. It is back to the, this is again about you. Okay, well, we should wrap this up because I don't want to take any more of your time. Where can everybody follow you on your podcast?
Everyone can follow me. My podcast is it's on Instagram, my podcast page. It's navigating_New York. And my Instagram personal page is just at @SophieColgan1.
Amazing.
Send me there. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much. This was great. And thank you, everybody. Please sign up to the Patreon /The Shift Podcast. Please rate and review. Let me know what you think of the studio setup. Oh, no. Oh, no. Our painting was ruined.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, you know, send me money on Patreon. And okay. I love you all. Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.